Step 3. Get paid. How the professionals parlay their result-oriented writing skills into cash on the barrelhead. You like money, don't you? Well, you can't do well as a freelancer if all you care about is money. You have to be passionate about writing and advertising first. If all you want are large paychecks, get into selling real estate or smuggling drugs across the border. Those are easier gigs than freelancing. However, if you've got your hands on this course because you really do want to write for a living and you actually enjoy working the system, well, the financial rewards can be stunning. There are three ways top freelancers get paid. One, flat fee. Two, commissions or royalties. Three, fee plus commissions. You'll notice I did not include hourly wage in this list. I'm not exactly shocked when rookies come to me and ask how much they should charge per hour because I did it myself at first. It's just a stupid way to put a value on your value as a writer. When you're just starting out, it may take you 16 drafts, for example, over 2 weeks to craft a decent sales letter. And a more experienced writer would still slaughter you after scribbling down a fast pitch while waiting for a plane that's half an hour late. Your brain doesn't work on the hour. It works on experience. When you come across a job similar to one you've done before, and you can draw on what you did before, then you're way ahead of the game. If your previous effort was a huge winner, you can simply do the same thing again. If it needed just a little more attention, you probably now know exactly where to fix it up and add some new firepower. And you won't need to do the same amount of research. In fact, as you get more experience, you'll see where an ad or letter you did 2 years ago for some totally unrelated business is perfect for your current client. And you'll realize this in a flash. So essentially, you've just spent zero time figuring out the concept. If you were getting paid by the hour, your warp speed realization would have netted you not a single dime. So let's put aside hourly wages right here and now. Side note, if you get hired by an agency or business with an ad department, you may be offered an hourly wage or a salary. It's up to you whether you take what's offered or negotiate. If you have serious chops and Mr. Confidence is behind you grinning from ear to ear because the job is slam dunk easy for you, why not ask to base your salary on results? Get a piece of the action. A smart business owner will understand how this could motivate you to do better work. It's a win-win situation. Why not ask for, say, 5% of the gross? After all the deductions and costs of running a business are accounted for, 5% of gross can equal 20% of the net profit or more. That's a damn fat equity position. Yet, unless there's a line outside the door of proven writers waiting to replace you, you may be able to get it. Okay, if you're dealing with a company whose current marketing efforts are so lame that you know you can boost profits dramatically, quickly, and easily, why not ask for 5% of the gross above what the company is earning now before you've written a single ad? As a bonus above and beyond your salary. They have nothing to lose because it's 5% of money they wouldn't otherwise see. Here's how that works. Say it's a $2 million a year enterprise you're working for. You boost their cash flow to $4 million, and there's no question that it's due to your advertising prowess because numbers don't lie, and that's a nice bonus. What's 5% of $2 million? $100,000, not bad, especially when you realize that $2 million annual income is chicken feed for a decent sized company. If you have a $10 million a year company who hasn't mailed to their customer base in 5 years, has no back end, and runs confusing ads no one can understand, well, you'd be the fox in the hen house. But it's up to you if you decide to go to work permanently for someone else or not. You'll earn more as a freelancer. You just won't have the benefits package or the security of a real job, as if any job in today's economy is secure. But you'll have more fun. Up to you. Anyway, let's get back to getting paid for freelancing. The thing is, when you know what you're doing, you can live solely off the results of your ads. You don't have to, but you can. So let's discuss the three payment options in detail. The flat fee. This is the easiest and simplest way to get paid. You don't have to explain the concept of royalties and commissions, and it's a payment structure all business owners will immediately understand. Of course, you can still make their heart stop even with a flat fee. When you get to the top of your game, you should do that routinely. Ask for an amount that makes them turn pale. It puts you in charge and gives you more leverage to at least get your stuff tested if the client balks at what you do. I have charged different amounts for fees over my career. When I started out, I was taking jobs for $300 and $500 and happy to get them. The most recent fee I received for a single direct mail letter was $25,000. Pretty big range there. A lot goes into deciding how much to charge for your services and how much to take if you feel like negotiating. When I began working for local agencies, I immediately discovered there was a going rate for freelancers, about $2,000 per job, no negotiation. This was a fortune at the time in the mid-1980s. One-page letter, four-step newspaper ad, telephone scripts, brochures, the average fee I earned was still $2,000. It didn't matter. I would try to get half up front, half on acceptance of the work. This half-and-half arrangement was pretty standard, and still is. You get half the agreed fee before you even begin the job, which is why you must earn the trust of the people you work with, and also why agencies prefer to work with the same freelancers over and over. And after you've made any changes they want, you get the second half of the fee. Most agencies and larger businesses will ask for two invoices, one for upfront fee, another for the last payment. Here's a sample of how your invoices can be. Your letterhead at the top, Bob Smith, 311 East Avenue, Anytown, Nevada 89000, phone numbers, email. March 13th, 2004, to Sally Bohunk, Creative Director, ABC Agency, regarding invoice for job number 7654-A, XYZ Insurance Company mailing. Dear Sally, this will serve as my invoice for the first half of my fee for copywriting on the XYZ Insurance mailing project. The amount of $7,500 is now due and payable to the above address. Thank you, Bob. And here's an example of what to send out for the second invoice. Bob Smith, address, phone numbers, email, everything on you put on the top of your letterhead. March 13th, 2004. To Sally Bohunk, Creative Director, ABC Agency, regarding invoice for job number 7654-A, XYZ Insurance Company mailing. Dear Sally, this will serve as my invoice for the remaining half of my fee for copywriting on the XYZ Insurance mailing project. The amount of $7,500 is now due and payable to the above address. Thank you, Bob. You can get fancy and have your own invoice numbers up top. I do that sometimes when my bookkeeper gets on my case, but it's not necessary. It's paperwork. Just be clear and to the point. Now, there are not standard fees across the nation. You'll earn more in New York City, usually, than in Des Moines, Iowa. Just do the simple homework. Call around and find out what freelancers are getting in your area. Do your detective work. At the risk of getting a little ahead of myself here, let me illuminate you about the ways fees are handled. It's very simple. Depending on the circumstances, you either A, take the fee offer, B, negotiate your fee, or C, tell them what it will cost to hire you. The circumstances are easy to figure out. If you're just getting out there with no reputation, you will, most of the time, simply be vying to get the job and will take what the job pays. I haven't worked for an agency in years, and it could be that the ones in your town are still offering $2,000 for a basic freelance job, maybe less. A businessman may have a figure in mind of what your services are worth. Even as a freelancer with not much of a reputation, you may want to negotiate that figure a bit if he's so far below market value, it's an insult. When you're still shameless, of course, you'll take it. But as a lean and mean writing machine, you will have developed a good idea of what you should get. Here's a tip. Whenever possible, let the client put the first figure out. Don't offer to do the job for any standard price until you've heard what he intended to offer you first. It may be higher than what you had in mind. Don't leave money on the table because you can't keep your mouth shut. The best place to be is to have a solid reputation and have the potential client contact you and ask if you can work for him. At that point, you simply tell him what the fee is and off you go on the job. Another side note on this. Sometimes the client will hand you a contract if he's had experience with hiring freelance help before. This is the case with large mailers. They have a standard contract they use with most writers. It's a deal killer to refuse to sign it, though you can negotiate the terms. I have successfully, but it took a long time and threatened to sink the deal because 14 lawyers and 6 vice presidents had to sign off on any changes, which took forever. The changes I wanted were mostly to do with deadlines. Often I would get a contract late because the large mailers are so damn big they sometimes operate like a federal bureaucracy, you know, like the IRS continuing to send tax bills to dead people 10 years after the funeral. Other times, the deal had gotten confused between the agreement we made on the phone and the actual printing of the contract, and it had to be changed. To cover my ass, I refused to start work until A, I had a clear deadline adjusted for any lateness on their part, and B, I had the first check in hand. However, with private clients, even those who have worked with freelancers before, if a contract is involved, it's up to you to present one or not. I've attached contract samples at the end of this section, and I'll read them to you. Feel free to add to them or make them even shorter according to your paranoia and ability to trust the businessman you're working with. Here's the bottom line, however. Producing a contract is a way of establishing your authority in the deal. If you leave it to the client, you'll end up with a 40-page document tossed in your lap. Try to keep the lawyers as far away as possible. We call lawyers deal killers for just this reason. They can concoct a legal document so Byzantine and so convoluted that no sane person would sign it. Twisted as it sounds, many lawyers out there consider it their duty to wreck the deal. I don't know what they're teaching people in law schools, but it ain't good marketing and advertising. A lawyer will want you, the freelancer, to assume all risk in the deal, meaning all they can think about when reading ad copy is how some other asshole lawyer could use the copy as a vehicle to sue the business. It's crazy. Listen closely. You do not assume any risk for the ad. Not ever. Not no how, not no way. You are merely translating a sales message for the client. Your skills are in taking information he provides you with and working that information into an ad that generates sales. You don't manufacture the product, you aren't quality control, you don't deliver it. You're just the writer. On the other hand, you want to own the ad outright. This won't go over well with most clients, but if you can swing it, make the arrangements seem like he's leasing the ad to use. This way, if he ever stops paying you royalties, you can legally forbid him to use the ad anymore. This is a small difference in the way most people look at ownership of the ad, yet a large difference in who's right when payments stop. You'll see how some writers do it in the contract examples attached. Commissions and royalties. Up until the mid-1980s, copywriters almost always worked for a flat fee and nothing more. If there was any equity to be shared, it would be in the form of bonuses or making the writer an actual partner in the project. What changed was the blurring of the lines between copywriter and businessman. As testing became even more scientific among the larger mailers, the jaw-dropping differences between what a so-so ad could pull and what a world-class ad could pull became very apparent. And the top writers decided they deserved more equity in the projects they helped make successful. It was a simple decision to most savvy businesses: give the really great writer a piece of the spectacular profits, or go hire a mediocre writer and keep all of the mediocre profits. Which would you rather have as a businessman? 100% of $100,000 or 95% of $10 million? That's the sort of difference testing was revealing, too. And a lot of top writers were saying, screw you, I'll go write my own ad for a similar product and start my own business. And they would. And with the superior copywriting they put out, they were in a position to demolish the original company. But running a business is so much less fun than simply being a writer. So when savvy businesses agreed to share the profits with the writer, it became a win-win situation. Businessmen got back to business and the writers got back to writing, and everyone got richer. The very best writers, in fact, are so confident of their ability to write winning sales pieces, either letters or ads or online sales pitches, that they don't want any upfront fee at all. So in essence, the business hires them for nothing and only pays them when and if what they write becomes a smashing success. This is really ballsy in the big leagues. The top mailers in this country will often pit two of the best writers available against each other in a project. Each writes a piece, and each piece gets tested scientifically against the other. A decent test at this level can consist of 25,000 letters mailed of each version. Statistically, you're supposed to be able to get significant numbers with only 5,000 pieces mailed, but the big mailers aren't taking any chances, because they're going to roll out in the millions. Only one piece wins. That winning piece is called the control, and it will immediately get mailed to multiple millions of names. When the writer is insanely confident of his ability to win the control, he may eschew any initial payment and instead demand a larger share of the cash flow his piece brings in. Two common ways to do this are: one, getting a percentage of the gross income generated by the mailing, and two, getting paid for each letter that is mailed. In other words, it might be 2 cents per piece mailed, which would be $20 per thousand mailed, $2,000 per 100,000 mailed, and $20,000 per million pieces mailed. It is not unusual for a good letter to mail to 20 or 30 million names and more in the course of a campaign. Do the math. Top writers have become millionaires from a single control. Don't start salivating yet, though. There are just a handful of writers of this caliber in the entire world, and it took them years to reach that level of skill. Plus, as a control, each time a new list is mailed, another world-class writer is invited to try to knock the control out. So just winning the first round is no guarantee your control will survive the next round. It's cutthroat. The mailers are trying to knock the control out because that means they just found another piece that works better. And that huge volume, at that huge volume of mailing, even a fraction of a percentage point can mean a fortune in new profits. My first huge winner in this game was with Rodale, and I knocked off their number one copywriter, who was none too pleased about it. This was my first time out for them, too. It took me a month to craft that letter, and it mailed for over 5 years, despite attempts by other top writers to knock it out on every single mailing. That was a bitch of a good letter. And because it was mailed several times each year to new lists, I received a nice little check every quarter for the entire time it was the control. Now, that's easy money. So why, you ask, would I decide to leave that arena where the money seems so thick and heavy? And I will tell you, doing those jobs can take years off your life. For me, it's just not worth it. It can take a month or more just to get the first manuscript for one of those pieces ready. Then it has to run the gauntlet of lawyers and vice presidents and a dozen other people who all want it changed at the cellular level. That process can take another month easily. Sure, the money is good if you win, but remember, only one piece wins. I've lost by a fraction of a percentage point in results, and it may have been 30 percentage points because I lost and all my work was wasted. My piece was not put on a shelf. It was put in the trash, along with all the other pieces by top writers who, for whatever reason, were beaten by someone else who got the control. Bummer. Now, as I write this, many of the top mailers are having serious and very stupid second thoughts about paying royalties at all. This is because the accountants, bean counters, have gotten too much power. It's like the HMOs deciding whether you can have the medical attention you need based solely on cost. This re-examination of royalties has caused many top writers to tell these companies to go screw themselves. Thus, there may be more openings than usual for copywriters a step or two below world class to get a shot they might never otherwise have gotten. If your chops are tight and nasty, be my guest to go after one of these jobs. You'll find the names of the top mailers in Ad Age and Target Marketing publications. I am not going to list them here because, frankly, if you have to ask who these top mailers are, then you're not ready to go to work for them. That's not being cruel, that's being honest. Okay, here's a hint. I'm so easy. Rodale, Agora, Phillips, Boardroom. If you can't take it from there, you're not in the big leagues yet. Trust me, when you're ready, these guys will find you. Back to royalties. Now, these top companies have never, to my knowledge, offered anyone a piece of the profits. For one thing, they want to keep their profit numbers a state secret. For another, it can be an accounting nightmare. So at most, they will hand out royalties based on per piece mailed. But it can be easier to hand out profit sharing for businesses who mail smaller amounts. The large mailers try to put out products that can reach incredibly broad sections of the population, like diets, which can mail tomorrow to 50 million names, or general health stuff. Something like one-third of the population of the U.S. over 30 years old has arthritis, for example. That's 80 million names. Or music. Those Time Life oldies collections can be mailed to every baby boomer on the planet. Now, say you work for a business that only goes to Ford Mustang owners. That's still several million names, but not enough to interest the top mailers. Or say you work for someone who has a product he wants to run in USA Today, which will hit 6 million people on Friday, but there's no mailing cost to divvy up. The only number to get a piece of the action on, therefore, is the money coming in on sales. It's the same for online sales. I like to work for a percentage of gross profits. Write down the word gross right now and put it on your wall somewhere where you can see it every time you talk to a client. Gross means if an ad pulls in $100,000 in sales, the gross profit is $100,000. Rookies at this kind of payment negotiation often agree to take a percentage of net profits. Net means if an ad pulls in $100,000, the business gets to deduct the cost of the mailing, the cost of fulfillment, the cost of materials, returns, refunds, overhead, rent, salaries, and maybe even the cost of sending his daughter to UCLA. And out of that $100,000, the net profit can be zero. Don't ever get suckered into accepting a royalty agreement based on net earnings. To the IRS, to their ex-wives, and to you, the net profits on every project of a money-savvy businessman will nearly always be around zero. One exception, I sometimes, like when I trust my client completely, or at least if I know where he lives, I will accept a modified net to work the percentage from, or a modified gross. This means total money brought in minus the cost of refunds. Nothing else is figured in. That kind of modified net or gross will make the project still worthwhile. And it's fair because the client bears the burden of those specific costs. And once in a while, it may make sense to deduct the cost of the mailing. But you get into vicious accounting even there. I like to keep things simple. That's why I like to work on a straight percentage of the gross. I write an ad, it pulls $100,000 in November, and my check for the month is a percentage of $100,000, usually 5%. I don't care what else is figured in by their account and for taxes or anything else. Okay, maybe they get to deduct refunds, but that's it. I like nice round numbers. They're beautiful, man. Side note, I like to receive my royalties monthly. But sometimes the client's accounting department insists on quarterly. If you're okay with that, fine. If you're not okay with that, insist right back at him that you need monthly checks. Let the accountant work it out. It's his problem, not yours. I've even worked deals where I got paid weekly. That was fun, but it was difficult to convince the client to do it. Still, give it a shot at least once in a while. Weekly checks are like frequent pats on the back. Fee plus royalty. Fee plus royalty. My fee structure has changed a lot over the years. The last time I worked for one of the big league mailers, I received $25,000 upfront as a guaranteed draw against royalties of, I believe, 2 cents a piece mailed, if I got the control, of course. If I didn't win the control, I walked away with the $25,000 for my trouble, which was over a month of full-time sweat and grief. If I won, I would receive royalty checks quarterly, every 3 months, starting the second my royalties equaled more than $25,000. A draw is an old-time salesman's term for commissions. You'll notice I use the terms royalties and commissions here almost interchangeably. To tell you the truth, I don't think anyone's ever bothered to really define the difference between the terms, if there is any. Novelists often get royalties on each book sold in bookstores. Musicians get royalties on albums sold. But the salesman at your local car dealership gets a one-time commission based on the price the customer pays. Yet your investment broker also gets a commission, sometimes on each trade, sometimes an ongoing commission based on the monthly amount in your account. Slippery terms doesn't matter. Most writers use the term royalty, so you can do that too. You're getting a piece of the action. If you write a letter or ad that can be mailed or run over and over again, bringing in hot profits each time, well, you're in for a fat check every month. Now, you can receive the upfront fee in several ways. It can be a flat, guaranteed fee that doesn't figure into your royalties at all. I've done that and I like it. You receive all of it when you begin the job and nothing more is ever said of it. Of course, the client has to trust you like his own blood before he'll agree to that. Or you can take that upfront money as a draw against royalties. Be careful here. If you aren't in control of the contract, it could be written in such a way that it's not a guaranteed draw, which means if you don't write the control, you would have to pay that upfront money back to the client. I've never heard of this happening in advertising, but it has been done in other occupations. You want to just get your fee upfront, free and clear. It can be paid in two installments, before you begin the job and after the job is accepted by the client. If it's a draw against promised royalties, make sure it's a guaranteed draw, which means that no matter what else happens, you keep the upfront money. If your piece doesn't work or win the control for whatever reason, you keep it. If you do win, your royalty draw begins when the royalties exceed your guaranteed upfront draw. Is that clear? All right, let's make this just a little more complicated, just to let you see how deals can mutate. Here are three other options I've encountered. One, financial punishment for missing a deadline. Rodale has done this. In their contract, which is several pages long and must be read before signing, it clearly states that if you miss delivering your manuscript to them on the agreed-upon date, you get dinged a certain percentage of your fee for every single day you dally. If you're really late, it can eat up your entire second payment of the front-end fee. If you're a complete bozo and come in ridiculously late, they have the legal right to come after any money they've already paid you. The way their contract is written, I imagine they can even sue you for damages if you get pathological and never turn your manuscript in. Don't laugh. You must know some procrastinators, and you must have seen how it can get so twisted that being chronically late actually ruins their lives. Once in college, I had a roommate in a big house who just could not bring herself to wash the dishes when it was her turn. It wasn't a time thing, it was a passive-aggressive emotional problem. She pissed off all the other roommates to the point that she was ostracized from the group, all because she created a crisis over washing a few frigging dishes. It almost ruined her life. I have never missed a deadline. Part of the vow I took, business before pleasure, installed a voice in my head that refuses to let me sleep if I get behind on work. It's my duty to meet deadlines, and I never even negotiate with myself about it. I procrastinate on a lot of other things, but not work. However, a lot of writers do miss deadlines. It's ridiculous, but it happens. And the large mailers have a fortune riding on those deadlines. It can cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars to miss a press date, meaning if the copy is late getting approved, it's late getting typeset and ready for printing. And if you've never seen the printing presses required for massive mailings, you need to do that. These monsters are a city block long, two stories high. It takes a small army of workers to keep them going. And you don't tell a big printer, "Oh, sorry, we're going to miss our scheduled deadline printing date." That's okay, isn't it? Because it isn't okay. Thus, the contractual effort to get writers to meet their deadlines. Now, the unintended consequence of this contractual handcuffing is you, as the writer, must demand that the client meet some deadlines of their own. For example, I do not lift a finger to start a job until I have that first check in my hands. I am not understanding about what the client has to do in accounting, about how checks take 2 weeks to get cut, about their standard operating procedures and paying other freelancers or whatever. Because they're not dealing with other freelancers. They're dealing with me. So I will handwrite in my own clause in any pre-written contract that the deadline will be pushed back a full day for every day they're late in getting me the information, interviews, and other materials I require to start work, including the first check. This can make the client apoplectic because he thinks he's supposed to be in control of this thing. And here you are making demands on his cherished contract. Stand your ground. You're establishing authority. I also make it clear that meeting the deadline means giving them my finished draft of the manuscript. If they need to put the copy through endless reviews and meetings with attorneys, accountants, and consultants, that's their problem, not mine. The large mailers understand this, but smaller clients who get cute with contracts need to be reminded that the process of making the copy ready to mail can take longer than just the time to write the first manuscript, especially if they insist on passing it through committees. I hate committees, another reason not to work with clueless mailers. I happened to talk to Gary Benzavinga just before his first project with Rodale. Now, this guy is one of the best two or three copywriters in the world. Understands the language, salesmanship, mailing tactics, all of it better than almost anyone else. Yet the verbiage in the contract he was sent confused him because it was written by lawyers who are never forced to be clear. Gary knows the game it can take to get even world-class copy approved in a large company, so he wanted to be sure it was understood that the deadline did not include the endless revisions he expected the layers of vice presidents, bean counters, and creative wannabes would demand. It simply wasn't clear in the contract. The lesson is, make it clear to everyone involved what you will deliver when for how much. You'll see how I have done this in the sample contract that we get into soon. 2. Draw against the second half of your upfront fee. Don't panic. This isn't as complex as it sounds. This simply means that you get the first half of your fee free and clear, but the second half of your fee, payable after you've delivered your manuscript on time, is guaranteed against the draw of your royalties, which means your royalty payments don't begin until after your drawn sales is greater than the size of the second half of your fee. So if you get $10,000 for the job plus 2% royalties on the gross, you would receive a check for $5,000 to start and a check for $5,000 when you meet the deadline. That money is yours no matter what. If you get the control, the first $5,000 of your royalties due are considered included in that second check for $5,000. The moment that your royalties exceed $5,000, you get fresh checks cut. Got that? It's all part of the game clients play to minimize the amount of cash they pay you however they can, while still keeping you motivated with promised royalties. Most writers agree to these draw against royalty agreements because mostly they're fair deals, and the money will still be good when the royalty finally kicks in. 3. Refusal of second payment. Smart copywriters are what I call optimistic pessimists. That means you're upbeat about the job, but you never bank on any money you haven't got in hand. Some clients will put a clause in their contracts that allows them to withhold the second half of your fee if your copy is rejected. It happens. The president may have a bad attitude, or the creative chief may just not like you, or your copy may just scare the living shit out of all of them. For whatever reason, including the fact you may have totally missed the mark in what you wrote, your piece is not approved and they don't even want to try revising it. In this case, your second half of the fee may be withheld. I've only had this happen once, about 17 years ago. The client was a total jerk and screwed me out of the second half of the payment from sheer assholeness. But it taught me a good lesson. Don't ever count any money you haven't already put in the bank. Doesn't matter who you're dealing with either. This guy that screwed me was a born-again Christian, for crying out loud. I guess he figured he was already forgiven for the sins he committed against writers, and he went on to screw a lot of writers and printers and a lot of other people in the area. I didn't get mad. I just chalked up the lesson and stopped living in a fantasy world where you can trust people without fear. Very important note. You should not be a smiling fool as a freelancer, happily taking every client at their word. The world is full of con men and crooks and just plain garden variety jerks who misuse their power. Nevertheless, the contract I have used most often in my career is to simply shake hands on the deal. I have several clients I've worked with on a pure royalty basis for over 10 years each. No written contract whatsoever. We just agreed to a gentleman's deal on the phone, as simple a deal as we could agree on. I write for stuff for them, and they pay me a percentage of the gross minus returns. That's it. That's the deal. No contract, no lawyers, no accounting gimmicks. And it's been a healthy marriage for many, many years. Risky? Sure. But the fact is, if you don't at least somewhat trust the people you're getting in bed with, you shouldn't be dealing with them. Now, this isn't practical or even logical. I highly recommend you get contracts signed for every job. I have done contracts many times. They legally cement the deal. Still, the startling truth about all contracts for freelancing is that you really can't enforce most of them. It would cost you more than the fee you got cheated out of to prosecute. And every second you spend in court is a second not spent on Operation Money Suck. I'm not saying to turn the other cheek. I am, however, asking you to get real, to exist in the real world, where people do screw each other and sometimes observe the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. There are two kinds of people in the world. One, those who have experienced our justice system firsthand, and two, those who haven't. And those who haven't cannot believe the stories of those who have been in court. It's not like television. The role of the courts is not to dispense justice. It is to settle matters, to make a legal decision that clears the docket of your situation. Forget about what you believe is fair or unfair. That's not how the world works. What's absolutely, unequivocally, no question about it fair to you is horribly and wrongly unfair to someone else, and vice versa. And the judge doesn't care a whit about what you believe justice is all about. The unspoken truth about business is that the bigger, badder guy with a nastier lawyer usually wins. You, as the freelancer, actually have little real power, no matter what your contract says. This does not make you powerless, however, not in the least. In fact, you still hold the biggest stick in the deal. You know what my secret weapon is when dealing with clients? I can do things they cannot. They can't write to save their lives. They don't understand salesmanship or direct response. They don't know how to craft a sales pitch or a sales letter or an ad. When you know the secrets of world-class copywriting, you are your own best insurance for getting paid, because they need you. That's why I like to form relationships with clients, work with them for years and years. They are super motivated to keep me happy, not just because I'm their secret weapon for making campaigns work, but also because I'll continue to be their main weapon for future campaigns. I scratch their back, they scratch mine. It's win-win all the way. And that's why I don't get a rash over the idea of not collecting all of my fee. Like I said, I've only been burned once in 21 years. Still, I never count on any other money than what I have at the time. I charge high fees because, in my mind, I'm only guaranteed to collect the first half of it. So I make my fees so high that half is really okay money all by itself. It's not what I prefer to happen, but if half is all I get, I can still sleep at night. Now, don't get me wrong, that one client who cheated me paid dearly. I put the word out on him, and he suddenly had a hard time getting even lowly rookie writers to work with him. His name continues to be mud to this day, years later, to insiders. He's the butt of jokes, and his business has suffered immeasurably. He got the mojo put on him. Dude, he got what he deserved. Karma in action. What goes around comes around. Me, I came away with only half the fee, but also with a super valuable lesson in dealing with clients. My advice to beginners is simple. I suggest that you get screwed, get fired, get rejected, and get insulted as soon as you can in your career, because it's going to happen. Better to get it out of the way right off the bat, learn your lessons, and become stronger for it. You'll know how to deal with it like a pro the next time. All right, we're almost done here. I'm going to list all the other payment options that I have experience with, and then I'll outline some sample contracts for you. And then, my friend, your lessons are done. I hope you found all of this wildly fascinating, because it's what your career will be about. You should love getting good at writing, and you should revel in getting connected with insiders, but you should really love getting paid. It's how we keep score, you know. Now, as soon as I put this down, a lot of these things may change, but right now, here are the examples of the fee structures that I know many top writers are charging and getting right now. $5,000 for a quickie ad. that requires no research, no interviews, and no intense brainstorming for a concept. Say, a letter to a house list of customers explaining a hot new deal. Many top writers can knock these letters out in their sleep. A $15,000 flat fee for an ad that takes a little detective work, but doesn't mail enough or produce enough revenue to warrant royalties. Say an ad for a consultant whose income, if you got a piece of it, would only be $15,000 anyway. A $25,000 flat fee for several hours of consulting on marketing strategies, plus a number of ads and letters, for a client whose total income does not warrant a royalty. Say, for example, you come up with the idea to use direct mail lists to find new customers, and you structure the entire offer, including the information products the customer gets. So you write a direct mail letter to prospects, plus a stick letter that comes with the product, plus sales scripts for operators to use on the phone to upsell or sell back-end products, plus whatever lipstick letters are needed to curb refunds or upsell. A $25,000 upfront fee plus or against 5% royalties on the gross income generated in the above campaign. Say, for a client whose income you generate with your skills will be a fortune, you want a piece of that action. Upfront fee of $5,000, $15,000, or $25,000, plus or against a per letter mailed royalty. With large mailers, you can negotiate half a cent per letter, one penny per letter, on up to a fat 5 cents per letter mailed. At half a cent per letter, you get $5,000 per million letters mailed. At 5 cents, it's $50,000. A flat per letter royalty. When you're raging with confidence that you'll get the control, this is what you would try. It's easier to get a hefty per letter royalty, say 5 cents per letter, when you aren't charging anything up front. To the client, your efforts are free until you get the control. Per letter royalties with or without upfront fees that follow a descending schedule. In other words, you get 5 cents for the first 10 million letters mailed, 3 cents for the next 10 million, and 1 cent per letter mailed for everything after that. This makes sense when the client is forced to mail to ever colder lists. The first list will be hot and the profits thick. Then it gets harder to make big profits as you go farther down. If you lower your royalty rate, it allows the client to continue mailing your letter longer because at higher rates, the amount he pays you may make the mailings not worth it to him. So it's in your best interest to be flexible. Remember, your royalty is a big expense to him. Above and beyond royalties. Get paid a percentage of what your efforts bring in above and beyond the normal expected gross. This kind of offer is a J. Abraham favorite, but it's tricky. You can only do it with a client who has had a stable income for a couple of years and can predict what his income will be for the coming year. That's incredibly tough to do in most businesses. One tweak, make this offer on a month-by-month basis. Take the last couple of months where the old advertising has run, then submit yours in a test. Whatever more you pull in, you get a chunk of. Retainers. When you work a lot with any one client, and form a trusting relationship, I call it a marriage, you may want to dispense with all formal pricing and just get a certain amount of money each month to nurse them along. I know guys who are getting $15,000 a month just to write one or two or three ads or letters and be on the phone consulting an hour a week. Other guys get less, some more. As long as it works, it's a great arrangement. Retainer as a guaranteed draw against royalties. Lastly, here's an arrangement that I really love. You get a percentage of gross profits each month, say 5%. If the amount due you for any given month falls below a set amount, say $5,000, then you are guaranteed to get at least $5,000 no matter what the total gross was. That's called a guaranteed minimum draw. When the percentage due you is over $5,000, then you get the higher amount. This means you're motivated to work with the client even during down months where not much money is coming in, because his up months keep your yearly income fat. Final side note. Almost immediately, get yourself a good accountant and bookkeeper. As a freelancer, you are considered a self-employed independent contractor, and you have to pay estimated income tax every quarter. Actually, not exactly on the quarter. Estimated payments are due April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th, unless those dates fall on a weekend or holiday, in which case it's the next weekday. So even the simplest part of the tax laws are convoluted. Get an accountant. He's worth the money. And please, please, please pay your estimated taxes on time. It's difficult to hold your hand steady as you write the check at a time when no one else you know is having to write one to the IRS. Just do it anyway. The biggest legal problem most businesses get into is not paying payroll taxes on time and then getting into a cash crunch where they can't pay them. Next stop, Audit City, and maybe liquidation and then jail. As a self-employed individual, you will also be in a high-risk category for audits. The IRS just figures it's easier for you to hide income, and so they often come a-looking. They've given my returns a close examination, too, of the last few years and demanded additional payments of, and I'm not making this up, $6.47 and $4.01. So watch your ass and be honest. Keep reminding yourself, the reason you're paying so much in tax is because you're earning so much money. Quarterly estimates, believe it or not, were created to make it easier on the self-employed, so the yearly bulk of taxes is broken up. It's still a pain, but my advice is to give Caesar what is Caesar's. I've heard of guys who don't pay any income tax at all, and they think they're getting away with something. Screw that. A multimillionaire once gave me a great piece of advice. Pay your damn taxes, he said, and don't cheat. You'll sleep like a baby while other guys are sweating it out in audits and wondering when the phone's going to ring, and you can concentrate on making more money. Consider it an honor to be paying so much tax. It means you're a winner. That's good advice. Spend less time trying to finagle your way out of paying taxes and more time working at your career making money. All right, here's some sample contracts. These are a couple of examples that I have used off and on over the years, or excuse me, I've seen used. You'll notice the first is called a letter of agreement, just to avoid the dreaded word contract. The second is merely an agreement. Now, let's be clear about this. I'm providing these as examples only. You do your own based on whatever circumstances you have. The point of this is you're just trying to spell out what you will provide for what money, paid when, under what circumstances. Pretty simple, really. It's when the lawyers get involved that it gets complicated. I am not a lawyer, and I have not used these agreements myself. To be honest, it's been so long since I've needed one. The ones I have used are all long gone in lost banker's boxes. My current clients, as I've said, are still operating quite honorably by the handshake deal we made a long, long time ago. And in all other cases over the past few years, my clients have either provided any contracts that they wanted or I've continued to operate on handshakes. I do not recommend you do the handshake thing unless you feel 100% confident about it. It's worked for me, but then I have a pretty practiced eye for honesty in clients. And the one time I was ripped off, it was by a client who had made me sign a long contract. You got to make up your own mind on this. Again, I have not used a contract in a long time. I have kept a file on sample contracts, however, for years. These, to my mind, are two of the better ones. They're not perfect by any sense. This is still a lot of lawyerese language in them. And most clients will balk at weekly payments, though Gary Halbert was justifiably famous for demanding and receiving weekly payments. Plus, it's not worth your time to pore over the accounting documents. You just want the right to do so. You're protecting yourself as much as you can against an unsavory client ripping you off. Again, if you don't trust the guy you're working for, either get out of the deal or just get a fat upfront payment and consider anything else you get as gravy. So, all right then, let's take a look at some agreements. And I hope you enjoyed the course. Let me know how you do. Letter of agreement, to client name, company name, street address, city, state, zip, dear blank. This letter will confirm our agreement regarding our business relationship. As we discussed on this date, these are the terms. One, I, Bob Jones, will provide blank with advertising copy for a direct mail campaign to sell blank. So that would be provide the client with to whatever the product is. Two, I also agreed to provide on an ongoing basis marketing expertise and consulting services for all aspects of this promotion. 3, all copy will be provided in manuscript form. Client agrees to handle all typesetting. 4, excuse me, to begin this arrangement, client agrees to pay me one half of my initial fee of $10,000 with a $5,000 check. No work will begin until this one half of payment has been received. 5, I agree to provide client with finished copy by the deadline date of blank. Client may request revisions at this time. After revisions are done, the second half of my initial fee is due and payable with a $5,000 check. 6, client agrees to test this ad to a minimum of 5,000 names. If this ad beats the response of the current advertising, client agrees to run it as the new control. 7, client will pay me monthly royalties equal to 5% of the gross income generated by my advertising minus the cost of refunds. This royalty is due and payable on the 5th of each month. 8, it is hereby understood and acknowledged by you that I, Bob Jones, am relying on the accuracy of all information provided by you or your agents for the creation of all advertising copy I write. Furthermore, it shall be your responsibility to carefully examine any and all facts, representations, and information in the copy, and to delete any inaccuracies or untrue statements. You, as the client, are solely responsible for the contents of all advertising. Nothing in this agreement shall be construed to create or imply a joint venture between you and me. And if anything occurs regarding this advertising which may require the services of an attorney, you are solely responsible for any and all legal fees. 9, the provision of marketing expertise and consulting services by me may be canceled at the end of any month for any reason with sufficient notice by either myself or you, the client. If this occurs, all royalty payments for advertising I create, regardless of minor changes done afterward, will still be due and payable in full by the 5th of each month, and will continue to be due and payment on that schedule for the entire time the advertising I create is used to generate income by you, the client, or by your agents or assigns. Should royalties be discontinued, ownership of the ad will revert to me. 10, you, the client, give me permission to examine at any time the appropriate accounting procedures and documents used to record results of all advertising promotions. If you are in agreement with everything set forth in the above items 1 through 10, please sign where indicated and return this copy of the letter to me, keeping a photocopy for your records. Sincerely, Bob Jones, copywriter, address. Agree to and accepted this blank day of blank, and then the date. That's the first one. Here's the second one. This is called just an agreement. This agreement between Bob Jones, whose address is 123 Elm Lane, Anytown, California, 90999, hereinafter referred to as Bob, and blank client's name, whose address is client's address, hereinafter referred to as client. 1, it is agreed that Bob will write one advertisement designed to promote the sale of a product known as blank. 2, it is acknowledged that Bob is not an authority on the aforementioned product and therefore will base the advertising campaign on information supplied by the client. It is further acknowledged that it is the responsibility of the client to review all the aforementioned promotional material to make sure there are no misrepresentations therein and that the aforementioned product is honestly portrayed. If any changes are required, Bob will make them, and only after the client is satisfied that all statements in the advertisement are truthful and honest will client allow it to be published and or mailed to the public. 3, Bob shall be paid a fee of $12,000 plus royalties of 5% of all gross sales generated by the aforementioned advertising or any advertising substantially similar. Terms of payment are as follows. $6,000 to be paid upon signed acceptance of this agreement and $6,000 to be paid upon receipt of the manuscript for the ad. 4, Bob's royalties of 5% of total gross sales are due and payable on a weekly basis for as long as the aforementioned campaign is run. 5, client has the exclusive right to use any elements of this campaign as long as payment of 5% of the gross sales generated by the aforementioned campaign is paid to Bob on a weekly basis, starting with the date of publication of the first scheduled ad appearance in any type of local or national publication and or mailing. 6, it is further agreed that Bob has no right to use this advertisement or any part thereof or cause it to be used by any other party as long as client continues to pay Bob the aforementioned 5% royalty payment of gross sales. 7. It is understood that client will provide Bob with the following information on a weekly basis. A. A copy of each insertion order or list rental order identifying the publication, circulation, ad cost, run date, and ad key code for each publication or mailing. B. A copy of all reports from the order-taking telephone service each week listing the total number of orders received daily from each ad key code. C. A weekly report detailing the daily activity of this campaign, the number of orders generated, broken down by ad key code, number of orders, total gross dollars received, plus any royalty payments due Bob Jones. 8. Bob is an independent contractor and is not an employee or agent of the client. 9. Client agrees to let Bob or his agent inspect any and all accounting records directly related to the sales of product, for which sales were caused by any and all advertising created by Bob. It is 10. It is further acknowledged that all product production costs, including typesetting, paste-up, photography, color separations, etc., are the responsibility of the client. 11. Any dispute herein under shall be arbitrated pursuant to the rules of the American Arbitration Association of this state, and any such ruling thereof shall be binding in all counts of this or any such arbitration. Dated, signed, dated, signed. And that, my friend, is it.